movie review. This is the 1963 movie, This Sporting Life. It's directed by Lindsay Anderson. It's produced by Carol Reese. A screenplay and a novel, David Story. And in the cast, in the lead role, is Richard Harris, who plays Frank Matchin. Rachel Roberts plays Mrs. Margaret Hammond. She initially is viewed as his landlady. Alan Badell plays Weaver. He's the financier, rich tycoon, who has an investment in the City Rugby League club. William Hartnell plays the scout for that club. His character is Johnson. And Colin Blakely is a member of the team and becomes a friend of Frank's, Maurice Braithwaite. This movie, amongst other things, was a huge success for Harris. In the early 60s, British cinema shifted from the typical Hollywood diet of entertainment escapism and gave the viewing public in Britain a course of what was described as kitchen sink drama. Stories reflected the tough working class life in urban settings in the north of England and enabled the emergence of a bunch of high quality actors and actresses to get their teeth stuck into dramas that were brought to the screen. And there were some remarkable performances amongst them. Following the early success of Saturday Night and Sunday Morning, starring Albert Finney and Rachel Roberts, and then A Taste of Honey for Rita Tushingham, the movie This Sporting Life saw the debut film directed by Lindsay Anderson. This Sporting Life also launched the career of Richard Harris. He was an Irishman born in Limerick, and at school he showed a talent as a rugby league player, which of course This Sporting Life is about. But unfortunately he developed tuberculosis in his teens, which scotched the possibility of him actually becoming involved in that sport as a career. So he turned to acting. He was enrolled in Lambda, the London Artistic Music and Dramatic Art Society, and his first role was in the 1959 movie Alive and Kidding. And he followed that up with supporting roles. I saw him in Shake Hands with the Devil, film that stars the hugely loved James Cagney, and then he turned up in Guns of Navarone in 1961 alongside Gregory Peck and others, and then in the hugely successful Mutiny on the Bounty in 1962, playing alongside Trevor Howard and Marlon Brando. But This Sporting Life was his first major lead role. He plays a bitter young coal miner, Frank Machin, who becomes a rugby league star player in a northern team. The credits give thanks to Wakefield Trinity Rugby League Club, and so one would see that as the venue for this, the action on the field. He becomes famous when he gets an enormous sign-on check, which was unbeknown at the time. But then he will go into the details of the film shortly. Just to say that he received an Oscar nomination for his performance as a best actor. And also he won the Best Acting Award at the Cannes Film Festival. Just a word of note though, alongside Harris was Rachel Roberts. Previously I referred to her with regard to Saturday Night and Sunday Morning. And here she is awesome. She is a fantastic actress who took a lot of the female roles in these films, and her performance is 5-star alongside Harris. Growing up in the early 60s, I became an ardent fan of watching rugby league on Saturday afternoons. Matches were live on the BBC and my father and I were addicted to them. The mud, the aggression, the sheer commitment of 26 men charging up and down a field in the middle of the winter for a basic wage. There were no superstars with huge bank accounts here. The game was only played in Lancashire and Yorkshire, and for most people in the home counties near London, it just wasn't that popular. However, my father being Welsh, they had a real taste for rugby, and so I nestled down next to him and really appreciated the commitment. Well, this movie, The Sporting Life, dips into the life of a professional rugby player, Frank Machin, played by the great young Irish actor at the time, Richard Harris. Early on, we get an insight into how tough rugby league is, and that those who play it also tend to gravitate to the pub on Saturday night, win or lose. After that communal bath with the lads, and then some huge quantities of ale, Anderson actually takes us in to the bath, and we see some fairly explicit, uncensored shots of young naked men larking around after full time. Injuries, of course, were also a common sight, serious ones as well. And Frank quickly receives a heavy blow to the face that requires a visit to the dentist and some teeth extraction. Anderson uses this opportunity at the dentist when Frank goes under following gas to anaesthetise him. We then see a collage of memories that Frank is apparently experiencing. And one can ask, were they factually correct or exaggerated or pure fiction? The focus of the movie centres on Frank's desire to be wanted, to be loved, and he sees Margaret to be that woman. A substitute mother, maybe, is what he's looking for. We learn nothing about Frank's childhood or his family, so this, I surmise, may be the secret behind his need to be accepted by this woman. Margaret, however, is guarded, cynical, and uncomfortable with Frank, and still in grief over her husband's death. Frank's macho-type behaviour doesn't go down well with her, and initially she rejects his hints at an intimate relationship. His success then leads to wealth beyond anything imaginable for him or for Margaret, and the relationship starts to become physical, but there's no emotionally fulfilling aspect to it. It's more like going through the motions, really, or a response to Frank coming home after a binge at the pub and his drunken desire needing to be met. It's a bit typical, really, of how one perceived working class households after a night out on the booze. There is a hint of dominance in the physicality, but Anderson doesn't dwell on the details, as Machin's character is a little different from your typical violent abuser. We do see Frank's softer side, as he relates well to Margaret's kids in outings in his flash Jaguar car. In fact, the owner's wife points out how easy he is with kids, suggesting this is where he feels safe, not needing to pose as a big shot. Margaret occasionally is seen to smile briefly, but in essence she is reluctant to involve herself in any emotional close relationship with Frank, which slowly eats away at him, eats away at his psyche, and leads to a tragic end. Margaret is still in grief for her dead husband, and cleans his shoes, visits the grave frequently, and has all the spirit drained out of her through her poverty. She's a broken spirit. The process of Frank getting a contract with the City Rugby Club is seen, some of it in a dream under the influence of gas at the dentist. Frank appears to create conflict with other Met players at an entertainment venue one evening. And I saw it as Frank's intention to show to the owner, Weaver, and Sloma, played by Arthur Lowe, who's possibly the chairman, that he could handle the toughness of rugby league. Machen's viewed as a special talent by Weaver and others, particularly Johnson, the club scout, played by William Hartnell. He later became the first Doctor Who on TV. Johnson takes Machen under his wing like a son who sees the talent in the boy, and Frank reciprocates with loyalty after the huge cheque lands in his lap. Margaret, however, is less impressed, and this deflated response stokes fire and anger in Frank. Margaret compares the pittance she received from her husband's accident at work, which led to his death, with Machen's huge reward for having done nothing of value relatively. And it's with women, notably Margaret, where Machen has huge problems. He also showed another side of his problem with women in a scene with the owner's wife. She tries to seduce him and he flees in panic, fearing being found out. But it's with Margaret that he's unable, it is Margaret who's unable to see any of Frank's qualities. She focuses on his rough, macho, misogynist tendencies and being loath to get involved, even unwilling to take any interest in his success in getting a huge signing on fee. Harris shows his acting skills in spades. Note his negotiating skills when securing his contract. The good feel factor of the money, however, doesn't maintain the emotional high for long, and his need for mothering returns as he strives to win Margaret's heart. Anderson shows us bluntly the contrast, the flashy white new Jag that Frank's just bought, amidst the long line of terraced houses in slum-like conditions in the northern town. It only impresses a few, this white Jag, while most, like Margaret, see it for what it is, self-deception. In fact, with his male peers, Frank likes to be seen as hard to get. And when a friend and fellow player gets married, he puts on a separate face for the males and a different one for the women. At the boss's New Year's party, Frank is mainly alone. Margaret wouldn't come. And he's seen to be tolerated by most and not liked. And also that it's become gossip that he may have had a fling with Weaver's wife. It's a bit tongue-in-cheek, but Frank shows his insecurity and leaves to return to a waiting Margaret. His personality is far too fragile in this world of winners and losers. Their relationship's captured perfectly when Frank takes Margaret for a meal at a posh restaurant. But he behaves like an arrogant, foul-mouthed fool, trying to sell the image of a hard, tough rugby league star. Margaret and everyone else present are repulsed by this, and it triggers the slide in their relationship. Margaret describes their relationship as dirt, and dirt that she doesn't want to be in. The last half hour sees the relationship fracture into verbal exchanges that are toxic and stress-inducing. The emotional pain is delivered by both as we lurch towards the devastating finale. Anderson focuses on Machen's images as a muddy field, the working-class town, the smokestacks, the pack scrum. This is Machen's life without Margaret. The closing moments are soul-searching and should not be missed. In summary, a tour de force by Harris, a film that opens up many social issues and the launch of the new director, Lynn Anderson, is spectacular. This sporting life is a hard watch, but a necessary one for those who live through those times, and for younger viewers who will register it as a stark reminder of life in the 60s in the north of England in working class city areas.